Are you swapping out or are you staying all day?
I think I'm gonna end up staying. Dave had something come up, so.
Okay.
It's not gonna take as long as.
No. One of them got withdrawn. What got withdrawn? Which one got withdrawn, Steve?
41.
41.
Yeah.
So 74, too, earlier.
Yeah, but it's not on the agenda, right? Okay.
41 was the last minute thing. They had a family crisis that they needed to attend to. So.
Right. Okay. All right. Let's call these people out separately. Are we on?
We are set.
All right. Good morning. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I CRS. The time is 9:32. The date is Wednesday, March 19th, 2014. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of myself, Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State on behalf of Scott Gessler, Dan Domenico, the Solicitor General, Designee of Attorney General John Southers, and Jason Gellender, Senior Attorney Designee of the Director of Office of Legislative Legal Services, Dan Carton. Also to my left is Steve Ward from the Elections Division. Today we're meeting to consider title setting for, I think we're down to six matters. There are no rehearings. There are two titles for each measure. One is a statement and the other is a statement in the form of a question. Changes adopted by the title board to the first title in the staff draft will be considered adopted for the other title. For anyone who wishes to testify, there's a sign-up sheet on the back table. This hearing is broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website, and public restrooms are located on this floor. When the title board considers a proposed initiative for the first time, the board will follow three steps. First, board members may wish to ask questions of the proponent. This is to ensure that the board understands the proposal. Second, the board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. In particular, the board must determine if the measure complies with the single subject rule prescribed in Article 5, Section 1, 5.5 of the Colorado Constitution and Section 1-40-106.5 of Colorado Revised Statutes. This is because the board is prohibited from setting a title for a measure that contains more than one subject. Third, if the board determines it has jurisdiction to set a title, then the board will use the staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes. A copy of the staff draft is on the table. Generally, we will take all testimony first, then the board will discuss and vote after all testimony has been completed. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board. Please take note that we are not concerned with the merits of any proposal here. We are only concerned with the setting of title. Furthermore, we are not concerned with legal or constitutional objections to the measure, except to the extent that such objections relate to the jurisdiction of the board to set titles or to the correctness of the titles and summaries themselves. Anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the title board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. In the interest of brevity, speakers may incorporate remarks made on the record in prior hearings on similar measures, and if necessary, time limits may be imposed on testimony. We are going to call the agenda in the order that it was published, so for anybody with questions about when your measure may be heard, unless somebody has an issue with timing, we're planning on just following the agenda. That means the first item up is number 79, election of justices and judges. If the proponents could come forward and identify themselves.
Good morning. I'm Chris Forsyth here on 79.
Lori Forsyth.
Right. Does the board have any questions of the proponents regarding the measure?
Not me.
No. Okay. Is there anyone here who wishes to testify regarding the single subject? Any comments by the board on the single subject topic?
No, I would just move that we find a single subject for initiative 79.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, that brings us to the staff draft. Is there any public comment on the staff draft or proposed question? All right. Then why don't you two just remain there and we'll go through the draft since there's no other public testimony.
They did submit some comments.
I saw.
Okay.
And so as a board, do we want to go through the staff draft or do we want to look at where we were last time?
Well, I think I would suggest that we start with either the proponent suggested draft, which reorders things from the staff draft like we did last time, or ours from last time. The only major difference is ours from last time mentioned the to whom constitutional retention requirements apply language, which was to point out that I believe that this wouldn't apply to the home rule judges in city and county of Denver, I think we discussed last time.
Okay. Why don't we put up, what do we have? Is that from last time, Steve?
On the screen right now is the proponent suggested draft for the current initiative.
Okay. And the only change here would be the language about, I wasn't here last time, so.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. When we set for 54, we inserted after judge, which is on line 2 of the proponent's draft, to whom constitutional retention requirements apply.
So the way that it reads now, shall there be an amendment to the Colorado Constitution increasing the number of yes votes required for a justice or judge to whom constitutional retention requirements apply to be retained in office from a simple majority to a two-thirds majority in the November 4, 2014 election and in every election thereafter?
I think my position was that was unnecessary. I have a slight preference for the proponent's version, but I also am fine if we think it's helpful to leave it in there. And then I had one question that I think we typically ask when we have very similar measures to assure ourselves that only one of these measures will actually be put on the ballot, because typically if there's multiple similar measures, we have to assure ourselves we aren't going to have titles that look too much alike.
54 is gone.
54 is gone.
Okay.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
This will be the only one, right?
We filed document Supreme Court. That's gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. All right. So then I'm fine with either version personally.
Yeah, I kind of prefer taking the to whom requirements apply out, just because it, I don't know, it doesn't seem like it's going to be something that's central to whether someone would vote yes or no. I mean, it might be a fact, but I don't know that it's going to affect a vote.
That was my general thinking too, that that's just because of how the amendment works in part of the Constitution that only applies to people to whom the retention requirements apply. So it's not, to me, sort of the sort of thing we typically do. But it's also, I don't think, a major problem to put it in there.
Well, reading what seems to be the mood on the board, then I think I would move that we adopt the proponent's suggested draft as it appears on the screen as the title for proposed initiative 2013-14, number 79.
All right.
Second.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So the final question is, shall there be an amendment to the Colorado Constitution increasing the number of yes votes required for a justice or judge to be retained in office from a simple majority to a two-thirds majority in the November 4th, 2014 general election and in every election thereafter? All right.
Thank you.
All right. And item 41 was delayed by the proponents, which takes us to number 76, recall of state and local officers. If the proponents could come forward and just identify yourselves.
I'm Mike Spaulding.
And
I'm Natalie Menton. We do have some comment.
Okay.
I felt it would be better to hand them to you now regarding the staff proposal.
All right. Let's start with the single subject issue, and then we'll go ahead and take your comments if we make it past that.
Where's my sheet?
Does anyone have the board on the board have any questions for the proponents? No. All right. Anybody wish to testify on the issue of whether this is a single subject? And with no testimony or questions, is there a motion by the board? Or do you have comments?
I guess I might just, can you just explain what you view as the, I do have a question, I guess it's probably appropriate now. Just, can you just explain what you view as the major changes you're making to the existing law with this?
And we are duplicating a lot of the existing law because we're accomplishing the same thing. It's just we're cleaning up a lot of the deadlines. We ran into troubles with the last recall elections with the 15-day and other problems. Also, the previous one said you could recall non-elected officials, but your petition was supposed to have the number of signatures related to the number of votes they got in the last election. Well, obviously, they weren't elected. So we went through and fixed up a lot of errors like that and made it much cleaner. It's half the length, so it's a lot more easier to understand. There was actually one sentence in the original one that was 289 words long. So you legal guys are probably used to that, but that was really amazing. So we think this new one will be much more usable, easier. There was a reason that sat in the Constitution for 100 years before getting used because it's just so poorly written. And we think this will really clean it up.
Okay, so not major, you don't view it as making major substantive changes, right? Just sort of.
We would actually say that the clear words is tightened up and cleaned the right recall process.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Just I would point out in that, so you think it's just clean up to have a provision that appears to override the Fair Campaign Practices Act, which currently applies to recall elections, so that no longer applies?
Please state that again. And could you give, like, just specify, are you talking about petition requirements, affidavit requirements?
Section 3 in enforcement, the sentence that says, to reduce retaliation and intimidation, no law, rule, or court shall prohibit, regulate, or limit recall or candidate petition circulator payments or recall donors or require name paid circulators or recall donors.
It is an interesting question from my perspective. We have seen during last year where there were some questions as to whether there were some retaliation against those who were the proponents. And also, I don't know that we're necessarily overriding that much versus cleaning it up because things have been put into the Constitution that the courts have deemed is unconstitutional.
And this specifies how to handle the petitioners. It's specified actually in the amendment so that there was not a need for some of the other problems that we have where we have conflicting laws, et cetera.
Okay. Then my only other question is, right now, are any non-elective officers eligible for recall, or is that entirely new?
I mean, according to the Amendment or 21 that's in the Constitution right now, non-elective officers are up for recall. That's part of the original.
The original founders didn't envision government to grow to what it is. So this is actually tightening up who can be recalled, and the main purpose of this is just to provide accountability of people who hold certain roles, that voters can hold them accountable.
And if you read the original, even dog catchers or secretaries, anybody could be recalled, and now it's just heads of departments.
So let me just follow up on that. In Section 3, what's a Colorado adult citizen? Is that someone who lives here or someone who's just here circulating?
I think Colorado means citizen of Colorado, somebody lives in Colorado.
Resident?
Yeah.
And we did address this, I think my understanding was we could bring forward answers that we had provided in the legislative council, and that was brought up. If, you know, if we can just submit that for the record, and I'll just repeat what we submitted in the record, if you would.
Go ahead, yeah.
Prefer, okay. Since we had about 9 pages, let me just go on record here so that the, those listening.
Here it is.
Yeah, what this is, it says in the actually, adult means 18 years or older, and no circulator, need to be registered Colorado, registered Colorado voter or local homeowner, or prove you was born here, will stay here until dies, as with current registration law, voter registration law. Residency is a matter of personal intent with no time limit. And citizen is just to prevent, perhaps, those who may opponents to this measure, that an illegal, let's say, an undocumented citizen would be able to participate in this process. So it has to be a legal
citizen. Yeah.
Okay, and in Section 3, you would also be eliminating any campaign finance reporting requirements by saying that there will be no law requiring the naming of paid circulators or recalled donors?
Just for the circulators for the petitions, to avoid intimidation and other things that we've seen in previous campaigns. But of course, campaign finance laws apply as far as raising funds and, you know, all the usual.
I guess I don't understand that. So it wouldn't say who paid the circulators?
That was part of what was struck down by the courts, as an example. And another thing is, in the old, what was still in there is, in one certain point, volunteers had to wear volunteer badges. That note is still in the language, but it's been struck down by the courts. Yes. So this cleans up language.
Right. So this matches what the courts are currently saying is correct.
Well, I don't know about that, but okay. I mean, I think the courts are still saying you have to state your expenditure for paying a petition gathering company, but the courts are saying you don't have to, you know, you can't limit pay per signature, but this seems to say that you don't have to report the expenditure to a petition circulating group.
Well, I guess you're going to, is there an issue committee? Because we've been going back and forth with, you're bringing forward an interesting question, which we'll take note, but there have been some recent petition requirements that were put into place by the legislature and struck down when they were challenged.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, we were part of that case, but I just don't know that this, but I'm really only asking for purposes of a single subject whether this language is going to supersede Amendment 27, too.
I'm looking at Article 21 again, and it, I mean, I know our recall system, the statutes and the Constitution are a bit of a mess, but Article 21 only applies to elective public officers, as I read it. And not dog catchers and secretaries. And I'm just trying to figure out what we may be expanding and what we're just cleaning up. So are you meaning to sort of both clean up certain statutory provisions and the current Article 21, make them consistent?
Yes.
or what?
Oh, this will be just purely a constitutional change, which, of course, is the takes precedence, takes...
Sure.
You know, so we're taking a very... Obviously, Article 21 is very difficult to understand, especially in this day and age, when we look at government, how it's expanded. And with our draft... As you can see in, excuse me, so many documents here, but as you can see in the very first section of our proposal, makes it very, very clear who is included. To fall under that single subject, the definitions are very clear in our proposal.
Yeah, in the original, it's like paragraph 7, where they try to specify all the different people that can be recalled, and that's where you get... down to quite a few people. So if you read through that, you'll see, well, maybe you won't see, it's fairly confusing, but it does have anyone that exercises any public or governmental duty, power, function, et cetera. And they're defining the term elective officer, and they're purposely saying, or they're actually saying it's not necessarily people who are elected.
And right, so it says every person, et cetera, who has power, right?
Yeah.
And then,
but I mean, this is the whole point. It's confusing.
I don't disagree with that. I'm just trying to figure out if we're expanding it or limiting it. Because I've never heard of that section sort of overriding, and I haven't spent a lot of time understanding it, but I've never understood that section to override, you know, section 1 that only applies to elective officers.
It's almost as if they're redefining elective officer in paragraph 7.
And that's why we especially think that this, again, clean and tighten up and bring it into something that is easy to understand with what government,
right,
how government's expanded to the point it has. I don't think, you know, the founders didn't envision how many people would be put power, but yet at this point we find that many of them are, we don't have accountability. And, you know, partly looking at how long it took before the recall process was even used, which I think was 127 years?
At least 100, yeah.
So we believe we are limiting now those who can be recalled and making it very clear and understandable. So in the end, voters have more opportunity to hold these people accountable.
All right.
So just for historical accuracy, the recall process actually has been used before last summer.
Oh, really?
It was used down in the DA's District 9 a few years ago, and it gets used regularly with respect to special districts and school boards and other kinds of elections that just don't get as much
publicity
and litigation as we saw last summer. But it's actually been used for quite some time.
That's good to know, because we looked around and didn't see any previous examples.
But yeah, the last statewide one was in a DA's race, because those are statewide offices. But many, many recalls have been held under not necessarily the constitutional provision, but the statutory for other districts for the last 120 years.
Okay, so they've been held based on laws written in other districts that allow for...
Under the statutes, because like a school board is still governed by statutes. It's not a home rule issue. Home rule elections are held under different guidelines, but special districts and those kinds of things have been held under the statutes. And there was a statewide election previous to the one last summer,
okay,
in a DA district. I don't know what that is.
So that usually happens when somebody's plugging into the media jack in the back.
I don't know if we have anybody back there right now or not, but.
Okay.
Is that the time to pass any comments or not?
I think we're still on the single subject.
Oh, yeah, are we ready for a motion?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I would move, despite, well, not really reservations, I do think that this has a lot, this particular initiative probably has a lot more implications than we're discussing here, but I don't think that any of those rise to the level of being a multiple subject, so I would move that we find that proposed initiative 2013-14 number 76 has a single subject.
Yeah, I agree with some questions, but I'll second the motion.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Right. That takes us to the question, which is up on the board. And I think you said you had some comments.
Now, is that the one that we sent in or the original?
That's the staff draft. Right. And is there anybody who wishes to testify regarding this matter? So we don't have any public testimony, so if you two want to just remain, then we'll go through the process.
And you have sufficient copies of our submission, correct?
Yes, we have copies of everything that was submitted.
And so basically the comments we're passing out is just how we got to the shorter version and hopefully something that's easier for the public to understand.
And you'll note on page 2 there one version has 50. Our suggested one has 60 words, one has 57 words. So considerably shorter. And we believe covers the major points to the proposal, creating a very easy-to-read summary, which is what's required under Colorado Revised Statutes.
So just walk through me. How would you recall a non-elective officer?
You'd follow the procedure. You know, you still have to get the petitions, and then it'd go to a vote. And
who's the successor?
It does provide for how successors are chosen there, and that the successor would be appointed in by like means, however they're normally put into office. So if it's like the chair of a board, then the board would elect their new chair or whatever.
You got one too. Okay.
Some comments?
I guess we should decide sort of what to start with. If we want to start with one of their versions or the staff draft, that would be the first question. I think looking at the comments we were just handed, there are some good points on them. I don't know that I agree with all of them. I think the staff draft certainly can be shortened and tightened up if we start with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather start with the overly broad staff draft and start cutting than not consider each thing that's in the staff draft independently.
So. Yeah, I think we could start with the staff draft and then use the comments
Objection.
We just got to see where it ends up.
I
I mean, I started out, I've sort of objected sometimes to the in connection therewith language, like the plaintiffs object, or the proponents object to. I'm not sure in this case it works to get rid of that sort of long-standing language that we use, like the legislature tends to use it, to tie the statement of the subject, which is required by the by our law, our constitution, our statute, and then the kind of mechanics. So the statement that comes before that is our statement of the subject, and then what comes later is kind of the material aspects of the measure. I think in this context, I would keep it, despite agreeing with the proponents that it's goofy legalese, frankly.
I think the subject is different. I think it's probably more about the procedures related to recall, not subjecting every elected and appointed officer to recall. I'm not sure that's really the point of the measure. The point of the measure is to clean up and redefine the procedures.
With returning to one, going with CRS 141.063b for a summary and to make it easy to read, it's I thought we were talking about a little bit was if you were to follow legalese and picture yourself making order at a restaurant, what you want, and how you tie language. It's, we're trying to make voters understand what they're voting on. And if we are preventing or putting in something that's traditional but not simple, it's when it's supposed to be a summary that does cover the major points, we want it to be easy to read, our thought, and accomplish the same thing which we feel the word which covers. That legalese, and for a title, thought it would be appropriate.
Most of our voters never see this kind of language in their daily life, so it's, you know.
Well, they do in their voting life.
That's in the voting booth, right? And you're standing in the voting booth, and you have this big long mumbo jumbo in front of you. It makes it difficult, and you know, I don't know how many people read through all those, but we're hoping to make it easier.
We could start a new tradition making these things a little easier and more understandable. Because we certainly want informed voters.
Yeah. The problem with new traditions is you don't have 100 years of legal precedent.
True.
So there's a give and a take.
Yeah, we don't want anybody to challenge it based on missing a connection with. Well.
So my view is, while I certainly understand and largely agree with the proponent's sentiments, that I would leave in place the language up through in connection therewith in the staff draft.
Yeah.
And then I do think I agree with the proponent's objection number three, which I think was reflected somewhat in the chairwoman's statement, that we could start cleaning it up after that in a helpful way.
Yeah. I mean, I think if that statement is already true, we could potentially just strike the whole statement.
Well,
I guess the question is it already true?
Right, and the proponent's suggestion, I think, is a useful way of not having to answer that question.
Right.
Just defining who is eligible is accurate, correct. Anybody who's concerned about it can look at the measure itself to figure out the definition.
Which is only 2 pages long.
So. Right, and then they can have the discussion we just had about paragraph 7 of the current version versus whatever else.
Well, we can have that discussion at the rehearing, I'm sure.
Right. So anyway, my suggestion would be to, at that point, replace sort of that long clause with defining who is eligible or something like that for recall.
Would you be opposed to going just a little more, referring back to the governmental officers in the main title and say something like defining which governmental officers are eligible for recall?
I'd be fine with that.
It's a long list.
Well,
yeah,
I think
fine.
It's very, well, yeah, very simple.
You can see it up on the screen.
Yeah, it's hard to see.
Don't look around the wall.
Oh.
Okay.
And that kind of will, maybe we'll come back to it, but then, as you'll see in our comments, where we're addressing item number 10 with government instead of governmental. I don't know if this would be now the time from our comments, number item 10.
Oh, now we get to have a grammar discussion.
I am sure. Well.
It's a grammar issue.
Proper form of adjectives.
Well, we were there with thereafter.
Historic and historical, always my favorite example.
We are trying to make this more simple and respecting that it is constitutional change.
Well, as an adjective, it should say AL.
Oh, okay.
Well, my historical example isn't all that useful here. I think they're largely governmental and government officers, I think, is basically a synonym. So,
there is a rule of adjectives, but there's also common usage.
Yeah. You know, one possibility is to change governmental or government, either one, change it to state or local. Which is what the measure talks about. If we're choosing between government and governmental, I guess I would probably be inclined to agree with the proponents that government gets the job done and is a little bit less, a little bit more common type of language.
I would second that agreement. So
this says governmental is the adjective for government. So.
Well, now we are going to have a fight.
Yeah.
Right? So I work in a government building, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's an adjective. And you wouldn't say a governmental building.
Yeah, I'm fine with government.
Well, line one first.
Yeah, so that'd be on line one and then line four. Well, line four is already fixed.
So then in number eight, I guess just going back to the government, when we say against whom a recall effort is initiated from serving in any office, what kind of office are they prohibited from serving in?
Any office.
Any elected office or any office? Like they could be hired to be the secretary or the dog keeper or no?
No, you can still work in government. You just cannot hold one of those roles that's stated in our proposal.
So it's the same.
Right.
It's the same definition from above.
Right. So anything that's subject to recall, no. Anything else, fine.
Okay. I don't know how to state that, but okay.
And, you know, there's a lot of information in the ballot initiative. And we consider that more of a detail of actually enacting it rather than something they need to read in order to decide. So in our version, it's just not in there, which makes it easier to state.
Well, the title, yeah.
Or yeah.
The summary. But it's in the text. Yeah.
But, you know, it might not be a detail that's relevant to making a decision on whether or not to fix the recall, so. Because there are a lot of other details that also aren't there.
So. I'm very familiar with them.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Well,
you're an expert on it now.
Let's. Why don't we just go through till we get there? Because
okay.
I'm basically okay with the staff draft's kind of procedural explanation. That's the clause on what's now lines four and five, I think.
I'm fine with five. And I mean, the standards for recall, petition, circulation, and review, I think, is fine. I think that's an important part of the measure, but we don't need to define it any further.
On the other hand, I would consider eliminating the eliminating clause that comes next.
I would too.
It strikes me as, you know, potentially important if it went into effect, but not likely to change anybody's view of whether to vote for or against the measure. So,
what are we doing? Is this us?
I don't know. Are we moving each of these changes or just going through the whole thing?
Just go through it and then move the changes. That? Let's just turn off our mics for a minute and see if that helps. Well, maybe not. I don't know. Seems like when I turn mine on, it causes it.
Well, while we can, let's proceed.
So
then we get to the section that we were discussing a minute ago. That one I'm inclined to leave in. Seems like a fairly substantive.
I am too. I'm just inclined to or maybe state it differently. Because it says any office.
Right.
Should it say any recalled officer? And that would shorten, replace quite a bit of that.
Well,
any recalled officer from serving in any recallable position? Basically what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
I mean, I think it should say something like from serving in certain offices, but that would have been if we had, I mean, up above, if we had said local and state instead of government, but then we'd be adding more words, and I don't want to do that. I just want to draw the attention to their certain offices and not all offices. So I'd be fine with certain.
It's your mouse.
I said I'd be fine if we just took out any office and put in certain offices. On 8, line 8.
Hey, Natalie. It says, against whom a recall is initiated. They're not prohibited. Only if the recall is successful. Only if the recall is prohibited, right?
And I think we could clean it up by saying any officer who is recalled, rather than saying whom a recall is initiated.
No, you know, not think? Quite. Because if you resign before the recall, right? That's...
But then you weren't recalled.
Right.
If
I'm... Exactly. That's the
but
problem.
But the trigger is that you were...
Subject, no.
Oh, okay. Or if you resign. Okay, never mind. So
there's an example I think they have in mind.
Okay.
If I may, what I think I would suggest is after officer striking against whom a recall effort is initiated...
So prohibiting any officer and then strike up on
line
7.
Yes. And then new language right after that. Who is recalled or who resigns or is removed during the recall process? And then just...
Yeah.
On line 9, put a period after years and strike the if the officer resigned or was recalled or removed.
Right.
Period after years.
For 4 years.
Yeah. And then strike the rest of that up to the semicolon.
I have to strike the whole rest of it.
Well, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
We would be in favor of the last because we believe there's enforcement is just kind of a given. That,
yeah.
But we'll let you go forward.
What do you all think of that last sentence about anyone can sue? I mean, I think that's true anyway.
I don't think that, I think it's one of those things that's not going to change anyone's vote either way.
Right, I don't either.
Now, the one thing I'd, just in terms of cleaning up, and I think maybe, well, I don't know if it quite shortens more, on lines 4 through 6. The first thing is I think I'd want to say describing, strike, after describing, strike the, which I don't think we need. And then I think I'd say procedures and requirements, because some of these things are substantive. They're not really procedures. And then I think after that, finishing, after that semicolon, I kind of feel like that's a subset of the prior one, the procedures for initiating. And I either argue that we don't need it or that you'd say something like including standards for recall petition circulation review.
Yeah, I think I would just get rid of it. I agree with you. It's part of the clause that comes before it, it seems to me.
Okay. What do the proponents think?
I think it makes sense. I mean, it's getting clearer and clearer as we go. So, okay. Yeah, I'm certainly in favor of that.
All right. I'm fine with striking it.
The clause.
I just spent so many hours on that clause. It seems really important to me.
Well, that built the bed that we could work for the last bit here. So.
That is two sentences.
I'm good with all those changes. The only possible addition I wanted to raise was the related to Mr. Gellender's question about the how this relates to the campaign finance and other laws about that we already have about petition circulators, whether that should be included.
I could ask the proponents a quick question on that point, which is, did I hear you right in that saying that this sentence that talks about the that's your intent at least, that the sentence that talks about the petition circulator payments or recall donors, that recall donors only refers to people who make essentially donations to fund circulation and not to sort of campaign donors?
Correct. I mean, campaigns are already covered in other laws, so.
Right. And I guess the reason I'm asking the question is I'm not sure the language of the initiative itself says that they would still be covered under those other laws if this thing passes.
Yeah, I'm not sure it does either. I think it could be read much more broadly. I understand the intent, but it's essentially saying recall donors.
Right.
But, you know, there's a recall, which is the petition, and then there's the election. I don't know. Mm. I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, in the campaign finance world, they're not. Right. I mean, a recall is a issue. And so you have an issue committee. It's not a candidate.
That's right. And if you have an issue committee, of course, you're following the campaign finance laws.
Yeah, but in doing so, you're reporting what you spent on petition gatherers. And this is sort of taking a different category. And creating this category where there is no reporting on where the money came from for the petition gatherers, where right now there is a reporting requirement because if it's pursuant to the issue of the recall, then that payment is reported in campaign finance and those donors are listed in campaign finance, so everybody knows where the money came from.
Right. And the other issue is, I think, if this language turns out to be read more broadly than the proponents suggest it should be, that besides the petition circulators, other, you know, donations for purposes of funding advertising or whatever would also be reported. So that's, I think, a possible consequence. Now, whether it's that makes it a central feature and something that people voting on this need to know about, I think, is the relevant question.
Yeah, and the problem is, I think it depends on the interpretation. If it was just about the petition circulators, it might not be such a huge issue. But if it was, you know, out of, you know, I mean, obviously, the out-of-state money was a big issue last time, and if you have no reporting at all, I mean, reporting requirements in general are a big issue to the people. I think we're going to have to draw attention to it without defining it, because I'm not sure we know what it means.
Well, if we were going to put something in there, I agree with you that we shouldn't be picking and choosing what we think it, how it will be interpreted, since we're forbidden from doing that. And the best I can sort of imagine is just saying something, incorporating as much of the actual language as we can. So it would say something like prohibiting any regulations or limits on recall or candidate petition circulator payments or recall donors, or requiring naming paid circulators or recalled donors, which is basically paraphrasing / quoting that sentence.
She's concerned about revealing candidate
finance. Now, and I might ask our council opinion on this, right? The naming paid circulators has already been found. It's already law that can't be required. Is that correct?
Naming paid circulators?
Yes.
Yeah, it's in... yeah, there was a... by Judge Mage that indicated that you couldn't show the number, the amount that the paid circulator was being paid. I'd have to go back and look at the specific question that you mentioned. I can actually do that right now, but you may want to continue on, so...
Well, how about we do something like this? I believe that even the proponents agree that we are making one change, at least to the extent that we're no longer allowing, if this passes, disclosure of donations for the purpose of funding petition circulation. That is, I believe, currently required, at least in terms of amount. So do we say something as simple as like overriding or modifying certain Fair Campaign Practices Act disclosure requirements? It's accurate. I think that's accurate without, you know, us being required to extrapolate from anything that everyone doesn't agree the thing would do.
Well, modifying certain campaign finance disclosures? I hate to talk about the Fair Campaign Practice. I mean...
Well, right, that might be a little...
Yeah.
Maybe it's like overriding certain campaign finance disclosure requirements or something like that.
I'm fine with that. I'd just say modifying certain campaign finance disclosure requirements. I don't know. What do you think? Related to recalls?
Sure. Or related to recall campaigns or something like that.
Except that we're not sure what that language means. I know what you intend it to mean, but it may be that a court's going to say it means something else. So when we draft a title, we can't get into interpretation because the court may say this means that there are no campaign finance requirements and recalls.
Okay.
And then this language would be misleading if we didn't, if we limited it.
So we have to answer then what needs to stay away from it and leave what's on the docs because it's serious.
I'm not a huge fan of that, but I'm not, other than my original suggestion, which is quite a bit longer, I admit, not quite sure how to improve it. The Mr. Gallander's suggestion of using overriding is one possibility. I mean, modifying is a pretty weak word for what it seems to do. Even if it's just limited to the circulation stage. But overriding potentially gets us a little close to the interpretation line ourselves, so. In some ways, I kind of like the idea of prohibiting, because it's both has an effect looking back and looking forward. That it prohibits certain limitations, campaign finance requirements and limits.
Something like prohibiting the application of certain campaign finance requirements to recall, I don't know if it would be elections or campaigns. I guess it would be campaigns in this case.
Yeah.
You need a prohibiting in there.
Do we want to say recall process instead of campaign, since we have the word campaign a couple words back there?
I would just go with recalls myself. That's sort of what that section, at least, of the measure says.
Yeah.
Whatever ambiguity that contains is sort of carried through to the title. I think I'm okay with that.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and accept, and I'll read it, and we'll see where we are. So as it is now, it says an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the recall of government officers and in connection therewith, defining which government officers are eligible for recall, describing procedures and requirements for initiating, conducting, protesting, and enforcing a recall election, prohibiting any officer who is recalled or who resigns or his or is removed during the recall from serving in certain offices for 4 years and prohibiting the application of certain campaign finance requirements to recalls. So let's get rid of that or up on four.
And do we need to say is removed in there at all? Is that addressed?
We have to have them both. Recall, resigns, or is removed. Can't we say? We have or who twice.
Yeah, I mean, that one needs to stay for sure. You could replace the other one with a comma.
Yeah.
Yeah, that first one.
Yeah.
What if he's fired?
I think that works.
We do Oxfords after resigns here.
Yeah. I think the second government on the one on line two could be removed, but also could stay.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Let's remove it. Any thought to on line three, instead of saying four, initiate and conducting, we say to initiate, conduct, protest, and enforce? Just to get rid of all the ing.
Sorry.
Or you like it that way? Well, on line three, if we change four to two, we could just get rid of ing, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, initiate, yeah, that's true.
To initiate, conduct, protest, and enforce.
And the one last thing I have is, I mean, it's fine either way, but should we go plural with and just say recall elections instead of a recall election?
Sure.
So we'll be taking a break after this to resolve some technical issues, about 10 minutes, once we've set title on this.
All right. Do you have anything else?
I don't think so. I mean, I think there are other things that could be included, but I don't think they have to be, and I don't know that the value of doing so exceeds the cost and brevity and clarity and such.
All right.
So
anything else from the proponents?
I think it's a really good product we ended up with here.
Okay.
You know,
we think it serves a mission of.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, then I'll move that we adopt the staff draft as amended and as it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. And the title and submission clause will reflect the changes in the question.
Okay.
Thank you. Right. We're going to take a break.
Thank you.
Good to have all those legal minds helping us. Make sure it's off.
I'm going to have to be looking for about an hour. I've had a hearing in state court.
Okay.